You're listening to HG 101, a proud part of the Greenlit Podcast Network. Pop quiz, hotshot. Who do you think is the most powerful group of people in the United States? Time's up. It's old people. You want to know why? Because old people are the only folks who vote in all these boring elections that happen between presidential contests. Do you know what old people want to change? Nothing. Do you know what scares old people? Everything new or different. Now, I love old people. They're always there with the hard candy and whatnot. But when it comes to issues of social and political import, I'll bet you and grandma see things a little bit differently. Because people our age don't vote, old people get to choose state and municipal lawmakers. These are the offices that end up deciding crucially important things, such as who gets access to healthcare and who gets to vote in the next big election. Boring elections are incredibly fast and easy to vote in because no one's there. And because turnout is so low, your vote will have a huge impact. You'll be doing what's best for everybody by going to vote411.org and finding out when the next boring election is and where you can vote. That's vote411.org. Tell them Xerxes sent you.
Some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge, a lane maintained with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Ogre Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure. And look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease. And add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower. Hey, Dogs Bower.
Stop whining. Let's jump in the tub.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Top 47K Games. Tonight, we are going to be talking about Mega Man Battle Network. This is our 253rd episode. It was developed by Capcom, unless I am immensely missing something. Yes, Capcom Production Studio 2, and published by Capcom and Ubisoft in the European Union. It was for the GBA, and its earliest release was March 21st, 2001 in Japan. I am Word on the Wind, and who do I have with me to talk about MMBN?
I'm TexAlbia.exe.
And I'm Satanga.gov.
.gov?
Don't you hack into a government website at any point in this series?
I didn't realize that you were a government agent.
Oops. Okay, yeah, forget I said anything then.
Sting! Sting!
Okay, never mind.
Ragtime. It's classic.
Yeah, the entertainer from the movie The Sting, but...
But anyhow, so Mega Man Battle Network is a distinct departure from the classic Mega Man fare. Instead of being a series of side-scrolling platformers, it is instead a more narrative-focused game that kind of borders on the RPG, and its combat is rendered in kind of a live-action strategy battle kind of going on, where Mega Man's abilities are denoted with basically cards. This is secretly a card battle series.
Yeah, not only that, but you have a lot of trappings of a game that has a card mechanic. You have a collection of chips, which is essentially your deck, and you draw them semi-randomly, so you can kind of modify what Mega Man does in doing battle, but it's still going to be somewhat randomized. Mm-hmm. And you do have an active component, so it's not just turn-based. Instead, Mega Man buzzes around, so do the enemies, so you have to dodge shots. So it's fairly engaged.
Yeah, there's a There's two 3x3 grids, with the left side being Mega Man's movable territory and the right side being the enemies. And there's all kinds of chips slash cards that, you know, do a variety of things, from being weapons to stealing territory from the other side to increase your mobility and limit theirs, or even, like, break the field so that movement is not possible. There's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, and the game does take place in a completely different universe. And yeah, in this one here, instead of Dr. Light having invented robotics, or the robotics as we know them from the Mega Man Core series, he did invent the internet, and everything is online. And yeah, absolutely everything is online. Yeah, he invented
informational technologies and, like, AI programming.
Yeah, so everything is online. Every house is online. The school's online. The toilets are online. And that's, I'm not exaggerating, that's a subplot in one of the later games. Like, wow. the sandwich you had for lunch is online. And people, so the internet is this classic cipher internet that's almost unusable. You can't just go to a website and get stuff done. No, no, you have to log in with some avatar, which is
the PET.
Exactly. And then you have to walk somewhere. And this internet is, it's loaded with viruses. So imagine you go online and you meet, and viruses are actively trying to destroy you. Not just take your credit card data. No, no. They're out to get you, and they're everywhere. So nobody has any real security, but then you have to get your avatar out to, like, actively murder all the viruses.
Do you think Capcom was attempting some sort of, like, you know, like, Philip K. Dick-esque socio-political commentary with how we're all going to be absorbed by the internet or something with this premise? I don't know.
I don't know about that, but I do know that even things that are not online are, like, interfaceable with the PET, because the very first plot point of the game, the very first dungeon, is a suspicious dude who is totally not a repairman comes in and inserts fireman.exe into the oven, which makes it set itself on fire.
Wow. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, despite this being essentially a parallel universe, we still have a lot of characters from the Mega Man Core series. Your human main character is Lan Hikari. Mm-hmm. How old is he, like 12 or so?
Yeah, I think he's like somewhere between the 10-12 range.
Anime!
He's shonen age.
Yeah,
he's very shonen age and very shonen behavior. And
I'm going to say off the bat, the premise that you are not technically Mega Man, but some Saturday morning shonen anime kid has long deterred me from actually playing this game. I'm not going to lie. I just want to be the blue bomber and blow robots up. But do I have to do this, you know, schoolyard BS or whatever?
Well, it kind of actually works better than one might think outside looking in, having not played it. Because, like, anytime you're roaming around, you know, in the overworld, you're controlling LAN. And then anytime you're roaming around the computer world, you're controlling Mega Man directly.
And, you possibly spend even more than half of the game in the computer world. Well, maybe? I don't know. What'd you say is a
fight? Oh, you definitely do, just by virtue of the fact that, you know, LAN doesn't fight because he's a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah,
It's worth noting, though, like, the big distinction here about Mega Man in this is that, you know, he will actually talk to LAN, and they are very, you know, they're very brotherly.
That's very nice, I gotta say. You know, despite all the evil viruses, it is good to know that, you know, you have a robot best buddy like Max from Flight of the Navigator.
Yeah. That's a reference. Hey, I like that movie, even though, you know, that kid did grow up to be a terrible person.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
I'll tell you about that after the show.
Okay.
But, they actually have, a majority of the conversations in the game are between LAN and Mega Man. Like, LAN is, you know, we've already established, you know, he's a shonen protagonist. And so you can kind of expect, you know, everything that label carries with him. He's good-hearted but stupid. And then Mega Man is, you know, the responsible elder brother figure in his life. You know, he's, like, the one setting off the alarm of the PET saying, hey, wake up, do your homework, go to school. He's the big brother that everyone wishes they had, instead of the one that, you know, throws soccer balls at them.
Yeah, you also have a bunch of school friends. You have your obvious love interest. You do have
who has a role?
Yeah, a big obviously, you do have a big, like, overweight and kind of derpy character.
Who has guts, man.
Yeah, very fitting. And you do have massive forehead girl. Does she actually have a navi?
She does, and his name is Glide, and I don't think he ever gets any presence except maybe, like, one point in the game. In the series, rather. Not in this game.
To be honest, everyone has a pet, but the common NPCs only have generic pets that just look like a generic NPC robot as well.
Yeah.
So if you meet someone and they have a unique sprite, then you know they're important.
Yeah, the proper nomenclature of these, like, little avatars for a computer interface is NetNavi, which is, you know, Network Navigator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally not stepping on some toes there.
Yeah, a lot of these are simply robots from the main series. Even though their design is generally quite different, they look a bit more like sleek and futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the English translation, both in the anime adaptation, because of course there's an anime adaptation, and the game, their names often change. For example, I think Fireman becomes Flame Man, Yamato Man becomes Japan Man, because that is a great name.
Why wasn't he called Japan Man in the first place? That's what I want to know.
I mean, well, like, they are, like, actually called those things in this game. I think that was just the anime adaptation that boned those.
I thought it was the game as well.
No. Fireman is just straight up Fireman, because Flame Man is, you know, different.
Yeah, Flame Man's from Mega Man 6, right?
Yeah, but yeah. I'm pretty sure Japan Man is still Japan Man.
That might be a thing. I do know that they did change the name of, like, the second major boss you fight, because it was kind of an unfortunate name.
Well,
we got it as Color Man.
Uh oh.
The Japan name was Colored Man.
Holy Jesus!
that was a bit of a whiff. So it's a good thing they caught that one in translation.
Well, now I'm less surprised that Oiled Man turned out the way he did and powered up.
Oof.
Yeah.
Thankfully, it's not that. Like, Color Man is a clown.
Yeah,
like, it's a perfectly fine theme. It's just the name, kind of.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just use Clown Man for Mega Man 8?
Because he's also in the game as Circus Man.
But
yeah,
then,
he's in baffling. Part he's in part six.
Okay.
Yeah, basically all of, like, the classic Robot Masters show up at some point or another over the Battle Network series, not in order.
Yeah, they're kind of random. They also have different affiliations. Your main antagonists for this game here are World 3, terrorist organization.
Which is represented as WWW, but is called the World 3.
Yeah, that's because W is a terrible letter for abbreviations, because saying W takes so long that most abbreviations that have a W in them just become way longer than the original term.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have anything to do with the game. That just bothers me sometimes.
It's like how 7 is the only number that's two syllables instead of one, so having to say 7 all the time really gets tiring. W7, I don't know where hell I'm going with
FF7,
this.
FF7, yeah, I'm tired of that one.
Yeah. Ooh. that's what you tune in here, that season commentary.
It's called cheap heat.
Oh yeah, that is a fair wrestling term. And I think Chrono Trigger is overrated, but so do you, so maybe it's...
All right, so moving on.
We're filling up our hot take quota rather quickly.
I'm such a jerk. All right,
It is worth noting that not every, like, Robot Master, you know, classically that shows up is necessarily, you know, an antagonist to you. Some of them, like, you know, Gutsman being owned by Dex, who is, you know, the kind of a doofus bully, doesn't want to admit he's your friend, but eventually has to kind of figure. Gutsman is actually, you know, totally chill with Mega Man, and Lan and Dex eventually, you know, become friends and, you know, all that kind of good stuff. So that's just one example. There's plenty of others. Like, Shadow Man comes to mind. Shadow Man is carried by this lady who is totally chill with you. But that's a later entry in the series, if I'm recalling correctly. I think that's two. I think that shows up first in 2.
Yeah, Shadow Man's a bit strange because he is the main antagonist of one of the entries, but then he's like a not really a goon, but like a second tier antagonist in an even later game, which feels a bit strange. Because there's so many Robot Masters to pick from, but they just recycle one of them. But that's how it works. Speaking of sprites, graphically this game looks really good. The sprite work is great.
Mm-hmm.
It looks very consistent. It's isometric, but it's surprisingly not annoying, or at least not like Landstalker annoying.
Yeah, there's no platforming. It's just a perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, and every dungeon you go into basically follows a formula of like cybernetic network maze with a neato repeating image in the background that's different for most of the dungeons that you get into. And, you know, it's pretty effective. You could say it gets tiring after a while, but...
It's kind of like every single computer space has an Earthbound background.
Wow. That wins points
that's
for me.
That's a good comparison. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Yeah, so, like, this game is visually very interesting, and you can definitely tell that they put a lot of care into, like, the first three entries of this series. There's another, it's a bit of a story after that, but the plot generally kind of follows of, you know, like, okay, so Dr. Hikari, aka Dr. Light, who is Lan's father, is, you know, a big important person, and so like these kind of like terrorist attacks and whatnot are either being targeted directly at him, his family, or his like place of work, and etc., because he does important things, and you know, those who do not like him, cough, Wily. if you thought you were getting through, you know, the entirety of this game without him showing up eventually, you'd be sadly mistaken. You know, it's like he's a very present obstacle to like any kind of nefarious goals, and Lan and Mega Man just kind of like get caught up in the lot of it until they just kind of end up just going, all right, we're the best ones suited to solve all of this damn bullshit, so let's go solve all this damn bullshit.
Yeah, does this world have a police force? Because I don't recall.
It does have a police force, and they are immensely inept.
Oh yeah, it does have like security bots and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do recall that vaguely.
So, yeah, and they can't really stand up to Mega Man .exe anyway, because he's special. He's kind of, you know, the first one that Dr. Light made, and there's a little bit of a thing there, and I'm not going to spoil that because, ooh.
Yeah, but let's just say Mega Man has the power of friendship.
Well, this very is heavy theme. More and more anime the more you talk about it.
This is another anime.
It's very anime, but it's actually done really well. And when you actually learn what the twist is, it kind of has a horrifying implication when you look back on classic Mega Man. And that's one of my favorite things about the narrative of this one.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if anime is anime, as long as it, you know, does it well, I can't really complain. I mean, you know, we have this Eugene Schild guy, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, who is, like, absolutely the shonenest rival to ever exist in a video game.
Oh, yeah. I think his name is pronounced, like, Odd, but I was just called him Chode.
I was trying to resist that joke, but you had to break open the... Okay.
Well...
This is me. I don't have restraint about that.
That's the spirit. Well, yeah. It apparently becomes good later on, but, you know, he's basically Edgeworth from the Phoenix Wright games.
Kinda, yeah. Like, it is worth noting that he is the possessor of Proto-Man, so that's why he's important.
Yeah, Proto-Man got an, like, early 2000s Edgelord upgrade. But he's very rounded,
except where he's very sharp. He's basically dire Proto Man, kind of.
Proto Man pretty much is Zero in this one, right?
Kind of, sort of, not really. Like, yeah. It's not a bad comparison, but no, not Zero.
I gotcha.
Like, you can definitely, like, look at it and go, like, okay, I see that. I see that association.
Yeah. Yeah.
Funnily enough, Proto Man and Mega Man get along way better than Lan and Shaw do.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah. So we did mention this game is fairly anime, but the plot is actually pretty decent, and in many regards just kind of dumb, but it's the correct and entertaining kind of dumb.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And the game just it plays itself super straight.
Was it just this one, or was it the second one where like the school blackboard gets hacked and you have to hack the blackboard to open up the school doors? Was that this one or the second one?
I'm seeing this one screenshot from the first where the blackboard has a giant error written across it.
So. Yeah. That's probably the first one.
They
get so many things that get hacked. In the final game, the zoo gets hacked. So all kinds of hijinks happen. Not even to talk about the weather control devices that could literally destroy the planet.
How, like, open so many of these things are to just like all kinds of like cybersecurity risks. It's really funny.
Yeah, the Mega Man Battle Network world, which is actually quite large, it does have equivalents to all kinds of countries. There's a North America equivalent, a Japan equivalent, a Russia equivalent.
It's a Europe equivalent.
Yeah, and
guess where Nightman is from?
The game, so the world does have a weather control device that is very hackable and can also easily destroy the world.
That's if
it gets hacked, and of course it gets hacked.
Yep. It reminds me of the Futurama episode, Mother's Day, where Mom just launches a full-out assault and turns everything robotic evil. And then, like, Leela's talking at the coffee machine saying, "Can I have some cream, please?" "Out of cream!" "Would you like some sugar?" "Okay." "Out of coffee!" It's like, I can't but think that Capcom
sets itself on fire, tries to fall forward.
Pretty much. Like, Capcom is trying to make a statement about, I almost hate using this word because it's like a stock intellectual douchebag word, but the duality of technology, the good and bad that can come from it. And you use technology to fight technology. And, like, I don't know if they're trying to intend any major statement beyond what they set out with the surface level of the game. But I don't know. Am I overthinking this? I probably am.
Like, the way I look at it is, remember, this was released in 2001 of March. So a majority of this game's, you know, production cycle was in the year 2000.
Post Y2K world, interesting.
Exactly. So, you know, there's like all kinds of, you know, questions about like, all right, like that was a time where we actually had a lot of questions like, okay, what does it mean to have, you know, more internet infrastructure as a standard thing? And so it's like, okay, how are we going to predict the future on this one? What do we think, you know, one of the possible futures is going to be? We'll be fantastical, sure, but we have to kind of like anticipate, where do we think things are going to go? And all told, you know, it's like, okay, everyone has, you know, their own handheld internet device. Yes. You know, everything is online. Yes. You know, anything that is of questionable security clearance is going to get, you know, thoroughly wrecked. Yes.
People don't have enough internet security. Yes.
Yes. So all told, like, you know, it's fantastical and silly and, you know, kind of like a dumb way, but I think they actually got, you know, the kind of feel of like a fantastical internet age really well.
And it doesn't feel pretentious either. So that's pretty mm-hmm. And it's actually, this game does not feel dated, which I found interesting because a lot of other games from the same era, like late 90s, early 2000s, they just make too many comments on like hardware specifications and whatnot and just feels ridiculous and outdated. It's like people gushing over like 100 megabytes of RAM or something like that. And
or you have like the Ripper example where it's like, oh yeah, the internet is going to be this thing where you have to like suspend yourself from like the BDSM arrangement to explore the internet.
Yeah, and the one guy says like, this room is 40 gigabytes. And everybody goes, entire gigabytes, that's impossible.
And you know, when you put it that way, this game definitely could have done a lot worse than present itself as a shonen anime. It keeps it simple, keeps it straightforward, it keeps it all ages, and
It is a shonen anime. In fact, it's four seasons of a shonen anime.
Actually, I don't want to talk too much about the other games, if I can help it, but would you say that the first one's the best one?
Hmm? No.
Okay.
No. So you actually, that's an excellent segue to the point that I wanted to move on to. So gameplay-wise, the first one is the most experimental, and it's also the most fundamentally broken.
Uh-oh. Usually, when you try and create such a unique battle system as this one has, you probably go more for concept than refinement, and thus you probably don't put in nearly enough checks that you can to ensure that you aren't completely overpowered. So,
yeah, that's kind of one of those things. Like, this is definitely one of those cases where you have the development of like, okay, this works, we'll just see how this goes. Oh, this has much more far-reaching implications than we realized we did. We will not be doing that in the sequel.
Yeah, we've mentioned the decks before, so you can get chips in this game here. You can trade some, you can win some from battles, so you defeat some special bosses to get more chips. and you also have what's essentially equipment. And you have this little inventory puzzle game where you slap together certain like data pieces, and you can increase Magnet's hit points.
I think you're
skipping
ahead two entries.
Okay, Emma, really?
Wait, yeah, that's the Battle Network 3 thing.
Really? That was not in the first two games?
That has like the grid that does the customizable stuff? That's 3.
That's not in the first two games? Okay, I take everything back. Oh, well. I could have sworn that was in the series from the start.
Nope.
Okay.
But, so, here's the thing, like, when you have the chips, I have to fight my urge to say cards, because let's call a spade a spade. They all have a letter of the alphabet on them. And the way the game mechanics work are, when you get into a fight, your little menu opens up, and you can select any chips that have the same letter designation among 5, and deploy those in combat, and you basically have to go 10 seconds of fighting before your menu is capable of booting back up and you can load in more chips again from one set of a letter. So keeping, you know, your letters, like the letters of your deck into, like a very small number, like 3, maybe 4. 3 is a good number, and preventing an alphabet soup deck is very important because it lets you chain things more effectively. The part where the mechanics kind of fall apart here in the first entry that they never repeated afterwards is that you can request additional chips, at which point you don't take anything and you just go 10 seconds. But then after that 10 seconds, when the thing next boots, it has 2 rows of 5. So you can pick from 10 things and you can stack up to 5 things. You know, it's like you can always stack up to 5 things, but now you have 10 things to pick from instead of 5. And if you delay again, you'll get, you know, 3 rows, so 15 things.
What?
And then for the rest of the fight, you're always going to get 3 rows every single time. In future entries, if you do the delay, you only get the 1 extra row for that next turn and nothing else. You're back to 1 row after that, and you can't stack it up to 3 because that lets you do all kinds of cheese that you should not be doing.
Yeah, it sounds like this exploitation in the system kind of makes gameplay more tedious than it should be, because it's like, you know, you're only handicapping yourself if you don't enforce delayed gratification for higher abilities, but like, why isn't that just available to you from the beginning?
Well, like, it's not available to you from the beginning because it's a limitation factor. Like, if they just gave you, like, you know, the 15 lines of things in the first place, then it's like, okay, now you can just pick whatever. All right, you've got these, like, 3 things that do 120 damage. All right, here's this boss who has 300 health. Party.
Yep.
So, it, you know, it's basically a balancing factor that you are only able to pick from 5. And so being able to pick from 15 for an entire encounter, you know, the rest of an entire boss fight, just kind of breaks, like, the difficulty of a boss fight, because there's, like, way less tension there, because you just got, oh, you always have all your toys.
Yeah, I think this is a classic example of the developers not having figured things out quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
So the game feels a little bit rough, but I think it might even be to its advantage, because it never really feels like you can just cheese the entire game just accidentally by playing it. So when I played this for the first time, I still got a decent challenge out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to put some effort into getting completely broken decks.
Yeah, well, like, you're made aware that card combinations like that exist, but you're not told really what they are until, like, you kind of either stumble on them or you check, like, secondary resources or something. So, like, these things are available, but you're not necessarily going to know about them.
I did want to say, though, I do admit a lot of fun that I have had with RPGs is trying to figure out how to break them into pieces, so...
Oh boy, howdy.
Yeah, so...
There's plenty of that to be had with this series.
Yeah, so... I mean, I haven't played it nearly as much as I should have to this point, but I will have to get farther at least into the first one someday, because... you know, if you can sort of get past the surface premise that this game is a wildly different flavor of anything Mega Man's ever exists up to this point, it's actually a pretty amusing premise.
Honestly, the first 3 Battle Network entries are probably my second favorite Mega Man, beat out only by X.
That's fair. Totally fair.
I really like the first 3 Battle Network games. Yeah, I do have to say that this game suffers from level design problems. There are 2 points of particular contention that a lot of people will tell you about. The dam and the final internet. The dam is a bit of a problem for a lot of people. I didn't have too much issue with it myself when I played it, like 10-ish years ago. But when you are in a combat and Mega Man gets damaged, when you end the combat, Mega Man recovers some of his energy. He recovers some of the health. During the dam level, you are on a timer and you don't ever recover after battle health.
Whoa. Why did they decide to clamp down on the recovery there?
Like, the idea of that dungeon is that since the whole thing is on emergency power, the pet system is not able to draw power, so he's not able to restore himself. You can use restore chips to heal yourself in battle. So, you know, you're not, like, completely high and dry on that situation, but it's definitely a difficulty spike combined with, you know, the tight time limit that you're on. Yeah. So a lot of people have, you know, a problem with that part of the game. I would say the bigger problem would be getting to the World 3's headquarters, which involves going through over 10 large maze maps of raw internet.
Noticed that RPGs with rather dungeon crawly dungeons.
That's the thing. You're not even in the dungeon at that point. You're getting to the dungeon, and it's bigger than all the other dungeons combined.
Wow, that's
it's a really rough, long stretch, and a lot of people are put off by it. I did not actually know the ending of the game until I checked out an LP years later, because at that point I was just like, nope, not doing this.
It feels a bit like padding, but nevertheless, I would say that the first three games are better than the last three main entries. That is, there's also a couple of side games of the side series here. The last ones just feel like they're running a little bit out of budget and time. And they do add some other aspects, some like minigame-esque stuff, but a lot of it's just not quite as fresh anymore. And they don't really... I didn't have the feeling they were polishing it beyond part three. It just feels like more of the same for the most part.
Yeah, after three, they kind of hit the issue of, all right, we are guaranteed, you know, good sales on this one, so we don't have to try anymore. And like they do a way different direction, but that's, you know, that's another conversation for another day. But the first three entries are definitely really solid, and the first is easily, like, ultimately the worst of them, but it's still a really good game.
Yeah. Shall we move on to ranking it?
Absolutely. So,
let's say anything comparable.
I'm going to be a jerk. Is this game better than Chrono Trigger?
Ooh.
I mean, I like playing it more than Chrono Trigger, but that's not going to fly, let's be honest.
Yeah, so, I know.
I don't think
it's worth a shot.
And besides, this is the worst of the first three. It's like, if we were talking, fair. Battle Network 3, you might have an argument.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, let me look at, and this is just going to be on a complete name basis, 228 Mega Man Legends, which actually came to play in the last podcast.
Why are we hovering around there tonight?
Well, because it's a Mega Man game.
I know.
To be honest, I think this is better than Legends.
I agree. Like, okay. Legends is definitely, you know, an interesting continuation of, like, you know, the Mega Man series. This one just kind of dares to be different and is just a different continuity entirely. And it's just like, okay, we're going to take everything you know and change it a little bit. Okay, more than a little bit. But it's still going to be, you know, kind of familiar feeling. And I think that between that and the prediction of, like, okay, what's the future and the internet going to be like, I think they achieved that really well with this game. So I can definitely see putting this above Legends.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm looking at a 196 Pokemon trading card game, which is also a spin-off game and also has card game mechanics, surprisingly.
Very interesting parallel.
I couldn't really tell you which game I think I like Pokemon Trading Card Game better because it feels a bit more polished, but I could also see Battle Network being ranked above it.
The other, like, 2 and 3 I would put above TCG, Pokemon TCG. I don't think I'd put the first one above it.
That's fair.
I'm just sidle it down a little bit to what I guess also counts as an RPG, Vandal Hearts at 202.
I sadly don't know anything about that game other than the box art had my attention for reasons not at all related to the game.
Vandal Hearts. I do like Vandal Hearts, but I think I like this game here better. It's quite charming.
Okay, I'll trust you in that. Close, though. Whatever.
All right, so Vandal Hearts was 202.
202, yeah.
And then we got Mega Man Legends at 228. Okay, I would say I would put this... I would put this at 220. 221, displacing Secret of Mana.
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't focus on that one.
You know what? I think this is way better than Secret of Mana.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah.
At the same token, I would not say it's better than Oath and Fel'Ghana. Like, that's a way more polished game.
Yeah, okay. I also wouldn't say this is better than Curse of Monkey Island.
Yeah,
Curse of Monkey Island is also a little bit rough.
When it comes to, silly comedy writing, boy howdy.
I do love Curse of Monkey Island. The hot take, it's my favorite of the series.
Okay,
so.
I'm not going to invoke the, Faxanadu clause this time.
Faxanadu's at number 204.
Yeah, exactly. That's always my excuse to, put things higher than that, because, surely this is better than Faxanadu.
I think at this point we can call it the Taxanadu clause.
We should. But I'd be happy to put this between Secret of Mana and The Curse of Monkey Island.
Windowed it down pretty well. Much as I like Secret of Mana, I will admit this game is far more varied and innovative. And you don't have to deal with stupid AI getting hung up on mazy bits, so that's something.
Or, getting stunlocked because they didn't take out the programming for you to get hit. And then while you're in your long stun animation, you get hit again, and then you just get chain stunned and have all your health sapped out while your AIs do nothing.
Oh, okay. I see.
All right, so then, at 221, we now have Mega Man Battle Network 1 in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And for the GBA... So, anyone have any final closing thoughts while I rendered this upon the epitaph of history?
Just one more question. What the hell is Mega Man Star Force?
A pseudo-sequel series that tries to use the combat engine and not have LAN.
Okay. I'll take that answer.
Alrighty then. Thank you very much, and have a good evening.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rude, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord. But most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.